Welcome to Spirit School. I'm your mentor, Danielle Sarank, also known as the Squamish Medium. In this podcast, I share honestly all I have learned about the mediumship and spiritual development journey. My intention is to normalize these conversations, to make way for a more confident, clear, and connected wave of lightworkers, serving the world of spirit with an open and joyful soul. Welcome again to Spirit School.
You are here, first and foremost.
Hello, everyone. But we had a lot of questions come through. So there could be digressions coming in. And of course, I always try to bring through the answers that are most helpful in the moment. A lot of spirituality is incredibly nuanced. And the truth is, my teachings, my understanding of things continue to evolve and change as I experience more and as I evolve more. So these are the answers that I feel inspired to speak upon as of March 19th. 2024. I may sound different than Q&As I did in 2021, and it'll probably sound different than Q&As I'm going to do in 2028. But my intention today is to bring you the most useful and helpful information. And of course, I'm an experiential teacher, so I do try my best to teach based off of my experiences and my understanding of these experiences. And if I share something that I heard or learned from someone else, I will give full credit to where I heard and learned it from. That's just part of my integrity. So Jenna asks, first things first, and of course, we're going to go here. So Jenna asks, I'm curious if Danielle has any experience with aliens. So very minimal, though I will say that I have been more aware of aliens than I have been about paranormal and spirituality. I grew up in a household that was UFO and alien obsessed. So my biggest fear growing up was actually alien abduction. It was not even ghosts and paranormal. Actually, I found ghosts and paranormal to be quite light in comparison to the fears and anxieties I had around extraterrestrials. In particular, what is it called when they take you away? Abduction. That has been number one bucket fear in life has been alien abduction since I was a little tiny type. So the experiences I've had, I'm very grateful, are very, very minimal. And I'm just going to tell you guys everything, right? So we're friends here. I'm just going to tell you guys everything because it all sounds crazy and you can't prove anything, but it is what it is. We have our experiences. So I have spent a great majority of my life trying not to connect with aliens. A great, great majority. But I did have an experience in 2014. Well, a couple actually. Me and my husband definitely saw a UFO together in 2009. He is the most skeptical person you'll ever meet, and we both saw it. And we stood there for 10 minutes watching this thing, and it was an orange throbbing light. And yeah, so I want to share that we have that experience. UFOs, sightings in Squamish are very common, especially outside the Chief. There's a CE5 group here, if you know the alien contact process that David Greer, I think is his name, created, called the CE5 protocol. There's actually a CE5 group in Squamish. So it's definitely like UFO hotbed. There's some great videos of UFOs outside the Chief from a couple of years ago. So do I believe? Absolutely. And I remember telling Amber this a long time ago. She was like the only person I really reached out to tell this to, but I had a really powerful experience when I was in a meditation, and it was when I meditated very regularly. So I had a lot of spiritual experiences when I was meditating regularly and like really increasing my vibration. And I just was in this place, and it was a vision. It wasn't a clairvoyant, like imaginary kind of experience. It was like a true vision, and it only lasted about 10 seconds. And I saw these alien beings, and it was a weird perspective I was seeing them on. I couldn't see them head on or down below. It was kind of like this weird angle I was able to see everything at. And these beings wouldn't look at me, but they said to me, and they had this dashboard with 7 or 8 globes on it, essentially, and they were universes, and they said, you're in the God universe. And I remember saying, what is the God universe? And then I was out of there. So ever since then, I've been kind of like, what is it? So that's the only experience I've had. Kind of lackluster, right? But have you ever had an experience? Please share them in the space. So I'm not alone in this, but those are the only experiences that I've had. And they are the only experiences I hope I have. I don't know why it's been such a big fear of mine. I think it was just the shows I kind of grew up with. Yeah, so curious about the God universe. Exactly. I didn't get any answers, but it made me think a lot more about it because we are a very God-centric Earth, at least. I don't know about, you know, beyond Earth. That's all I can kind of speak to. It's kind of interesting to think that there were multiple universes and just one. So it appeared that was like a God universe, like the concept of like God being creator, et cetera. So I don't know beyond that. I won't even pretend to, but that's the only experience I had. And, you know, I don't believe, like, if I were to just like put willy-nilly philosophy out there, I don't believe much like, you know, spirit, like everything can hurt us or anything like that. I will tell you, if you go look, my favorite UFO anything as of late has been when David Greer went in front of the American Senate last July and did a 3-hour whistleblower conference. Go watch that. And I think that is the closest we can get to any kind of answers on what's happening right now. Go watch the whole 3-hour Senate hearing, David Gersh. And I think that's as clear as we have right now of intel on any of that. Recently, he had a dream. I was driving and a UFO came and hovered. And then another one came and I woke up and said, speak. First word that came out was my first dream of the UFO. So I actually had a dream and I don't remember dreams very much, maybe one or two a year. And I had a dream that I looked outside my house and a UFO covered the entire circumference of Squamish. Like it was so big. Squamish is a very small town, I should say. When I moved here, there's 14,000 people here. Now there's like 36,000 people here, but it's still a very small town. We can't even get a Costco here. It's too small. And this UFO covered the entire circumference of Squamish. So that was like a little bit wild. Okay, move on to the next question. Most days it is only I can see or sense a spirit nearby. Although people are aware, though kind people are leading me to pursue mediumship, it makes me scared. Not sure why. My question is, can you relate to feeling scared and or have you had this feeling as well? P.S. I know you used to do paranormal ghost hunting type of stuff. I used to be into that until a couple of extremely scary events. Okay, so I'm so sorry that you had really scary events. I personally did not have any scary events on my ghost hunting journeys. Obviously, the scariest I ever got was at Chillingham Castle, and it was just trying to go to the bathroom by myself in the middle of the night. I was staying in the tower, and you had to go down one of those like medieval like stone stairwells to get to the bathroom by myself. I was terrified, but that was it. That was happening. I like almost didn't want to go to the bathroom, to be honest with you. But yeah, I can totally understand this. When it comes to messages, like when it comes to evidence, I think that there's a lot of pressure on mediums to fully comprehend and understand everything that we're channeling and coming through us. And I wonder if there's space and an opportunity for you to like release the need or the desire or the attachment to understanding everything that's moving through you. And like, can you just set an intention and trust that whatever moves through you can be understood by your sitter? And that it helps them, right? So it's hard. I find like a lot of mediums struggle with messages more than even bringing through any kind of like profound evidence. And one thing I have learned is I have said some pretty simple things in sessions that have been very profound for my sitter. So I had to really learn to stop judging or prejudging the information that is coming through me. And then understanding that sometimes it's not going to come through in like a fluid, full sentence, something that's going to make like a future Oprah book. Like sometimes the message is going to be more simple. Or, you know, I go back to this example all the time because it was one of the first times I was really surprised by spirit that this grandfather was coming through and all he wanted to say is like, remember the candy dish. Like that's all that came through me. And she was like in tears and she was like, that's all I asked him for. I still have no idea what the significance is. And the curious part of me wishes I knew. But it doesn't matter. That mediumship is not for me. It was for her. And it was for the spirit world. It was something intimate that was exchanged between them. So I think that as mediums, our role is to empty ourselves and detach ourselves as much as we humanly can, understanding we are human. And sometimes the messages won't be super clear to us and they will be more clear to our sitters. Still, there are things that you can do. I think that, you know, given you identify as like a born medium, you've been drawn to developing mediumship. sometimes the only way to get clearer is through the thing, is through practicing, through putting yourself into the arena. There really is an unfoldment that takes place and a confidence that is created, those two things, through more experiences and experiencing. So yes, absolutely develop. And I think it's human condition to be unnerved at the unknown, right? So, you know, when I started mediumship, I didn't have fear over dark energy or fear over being punished by God. I had none of that. My fear was humiliation. It was like, I don't want to be humiliated, right? That was my big fear. And so my spiritual journey and my spiritual development was around, you know, really reconciling the human with the spirit servant. And that's been my development journey, has been kind of, you know, decentering myself in my work and like making sure it's like for spirit, right? And it's from spirit. So there's some work to be done with that for sure. So that's what I'll say about that. So, you know, there's nothing to fear with pursuing mediumship. Just a lot of people struggle with how much personal development is involved in it. And I think that that healing and personal development side can really keep people from fully pursuing mediumship, because it's not light work, right? I always say like mediumship development is what made me actually have to really face my stuff and like work through it and heal through it. So it sounds like you might get some good healing from that as well. And the truth is, once we are kind of on the path, I think the spirit guides a lot of what we experience and like what we are meant to go through. So, you know, booked and busy, a lot of it is spirit is our agent and spirit is our algorithm. It's really just our task to become more sensitive to energy, to understand our own energy, to understand the ethics behind doing this work and like developing these sides for ourselves. And then spirit takes us to where we're meant to be. So try not to see too much pressure on yourself, because this is something that you have to choose, right? So like Caroline Mace's, you know, philosophy is really around the divine law of choice and consequence. Our life is only going to be as quality as the quality of our choices. And so you get to choose mediumship. And this is how come I call my program the initiation, because it is an initiation and you actually have to choose it, right? You can walk away from it anytime, but it always comes calling back and you have to constantly choose it time and time and time again. So curious to see what you land on and what you end up in, but I recommend, just in the most generic of senses, to put yourself into practice experiences and allow the experiences that you have to teach you and to mentor you through the evolution of your development, because you can listen to all the podcasts, all the books, all the classes, all the teachers, and none of it will really start to make sense until you're in the arena, like practicing art. So I think that's what's going to give you the most clarity. Okay, perfect. So Amy just says here, so I had an incredible studying session with someone in this group. So that was someone from the collective, I think, and they saw a brown-sized dog and the letter B. The only dog I ever passed when I was a kid was named Bilbo. For the medium, it wasn't a lot of information, but for me, I knew exactly how it was. So wonderful. So thank you for bringing that in. I don't know if you're a working medium, Amy, but yeah, mediums can put a lot of pressure on ourselves that we have to have all the answers because we're channelers. But I don't know a single medium who will say, it comes through crystal clear all the time. It just doesn't like that. And I think there's divinity behind that as well. Okay. I do think that you become clearer though, and you can become clearer. I just want to be clear on it. Only through experience. You're not going to pray your way into this, okay? You have to do the work. Okay, questions. So I did a read for a friend last week, and her mom in spirit brought up a very traumatic memory between them, and she was crying and asking why would she bring it up, and it was awkward. It was so detailed, but when she cried, I stopped it, and we moved on. Yeah, so Amber, this could be a hard one. And I don't think that there's any way to know what comes through us and how people are going to react. I do have this philosophy and this belief, and it's not always the most helpful, but like I have brought through different spirit communicators who the sitter had no interest in hearing from because, you know, of trauma or whatnot. And it can always be a really uncomfortable situation, and it is a personal choice. If you want to choose to end it and like move on based off of their comfort. I remember the first time this happened to me, I was very shocked that they didn't want to hear from them. And I was very new in my public work. So this was back in 2017, and I'd only been practicing for 4 years. I'd never really done too many public readings. And I remember leaning into my philosophy that if it comes through me, there must be some sort of level of soul permission that this can come through. So I chose to deliver it exactly as it came and wrap the connection with that spirit communicator. And I'm proud that I did that. But would I do it again? I probably wouldn't. I probably would have, you know, addressed it for sure, saying, okay, I appreciate you telling me that this is like off limits. Let me hop on another track or pull on another thread. I personally use this philosophy of like, there must be some sort of like soul permission here for this to come through today. And so I'm going to wrap up this connection. And what ended up happening is, yeah, I held by my personal philosophy of the time based off of the experiences I had had. But this person crosses the street when they see me. And it's a small town. So yeah, I just want to say there's choice and consequence here. But it's really, so what I would do with this, Amber, and this is how come in the collective, we have spiritual philosophy circles, because this comes down to spiritual philosophy now. We have to have strong spiritual philosophy to stand behind for situations like this, for when they come up. How do we handle the human interaction and the holding space? So it could be a really good philosophy circle question for us. If this comes up, how would we deal with it, right? And what would we do? And yeah, Leilani's bringing in a point here too. Sometimes the spirit wants healing around it. Exactly. And that's what it kind of felt. I had to, and I did a post on Instagram around this time, actually, where I said, you know, do you work for spirit or do you work for other humans? And yes, there could be an essence of both, but sometimes we are in the arena and you have a situation come like this. I'm like, am I going to serve the human or am I going to serve the spirit? And you have to make a call. And again, the divine law of choice and consequence will play out as it plays out. And there really is no right or wrong answer. So, yes, and you could stay with it a little bit longer. And like, if you're open, if you feel safe, I may just go to her for a second to see what the intention is of bringing through this information, if she would so allow. I have also seen, you know, Fleur uses this, and I've seen different students of mine use this, where they will actually start their session saying, is there anything off limits or out of bounds as part of our session today? And I've seen people actually go to that consent piece as part of their intro. And very well, this woman may have said, I have no interest in talking to mom. Okay, perfect. We will put her and table her to the side. Let's see who else may be here for you today. It may be a situation that comes up with that as well. There really is no one size fits all approach. It's very nuanced. It's about thinking about this, philosophizing about this, seeing a couple different options play out, and it being emotionally intelligent in the moment to know what path kind of lead on. You know, I have caused, or I shouldn't say caused, but I did re-trigger somebody's trauma once, and I had to really say blatantly, I'm not a medium right now. I'm another mom. I'm another wife. I'm another woman. Something came up for you when I said that to you. Do you want to talk about it with me? And then when we finish talking, do you feel safe with me returning back into being a medium and channeling here for you? Yes. Okay. And sometimes that's what it takes. And it, again, it's nuanced for every single situation. So just trust and accept what you chose. Do a little bit of kind, observe it, reflecting on what you may have done differently next time, and do some philosophy and philosophizing around why would a spirit who brings through or can re-trigger someone, like, why would they come through? And like, what is the purpose? And, you know, what does spirit want me to do in these situations? And you'll be so much more prepared for next time. So that's how I've handled these situations in the past. So Emily says, how do you reframe or deal with sitters who want to control everything and ask so many detailed questions? I basically say, I'm not your reader. And I've had to do that before. I'm like, anyways, I'm not going to offend anyone, but that's what I've done. I'm not your reader. There are so many readers who love working with skeptics and, you know, prove me stuff. And I can't open up enough in that energy. It's not an energy that I can thrive in. And we have to identify that for ourselves as readers as well. And we can call that in once we get clear on that. I know some mediums who love working with skeptics, like evidential mediums, you know, people like, I want to prove to you that life exists. And like, they love working and disproving and discrediting people's skepticism. There are mediums for that. And then you'd have to decide how you like to work, who you like to work with, talk to your spirit team. It's not a guarantee that that's all you're going to get. Once in a while, you might get a wild card. You might get an experience that is going to expand you and help you grow. And you have to accept that as well, right? It's not all rainbows and butterflies out here. And it very well may be just being courageous in the moment and saying, you know what, this worked best for me. Like, you're completely open. If I'm completely open. And one of the many reasons, I have a lot of reasons I do this, but the first thing, if you've ever had a reading with me, is I say, can you spell me your first and last name? Now, a couple of reasons why I do this is, one, it's a way for me to get an extra few seconds to work through my stage fright before I start doing the thing. Two, I never know people's names and I never remember people's names. And I'm so sorry for that. It's not rude. It's part of my brain that doesn't work. I don't know why. And three, because it also opens them up because they're not thinking about anything else other than spelling their name. And it creates this openness for them. So I get people to spell me their first and last name for all those reasons. And it kind of like just naturally opens people up. So you learn things like that the more you do sittings and work with the public on ways to open people up. I've seen people also say, can you take 3 high quality deep breaths with me? There's some beauty behind that and divinity behind that as well. And it's also to help people like open up because that's how you identify that you work the best and the clearest. And as a reader, you own the stage, you own the session, you are the lead. I've had different times where different sitters have actually, remember the sitting, it was actually the exact same place as the first client I was telling you about that crosses the street when she sees me now. The exact same sitting, exact same chairs, everything. And I was trying to connect for this woman and I always have my legs crossed. I don't know why, I just always do. And like, as I'm starting to talk to her, like, will you uncross your legs for me? That blocks off the channel for spirit. But, you know, I remember thinking like, oh, like, and it was one of these moments where when we were serving, it's like, I'm in full service to you. But it was one of those moments where I had to kind of like own the session and say, you know what? Like, you have today off. I'm working for you today. So like, that's all I said. I was like, you have today off. Don't worry. I'll work how I like to work. And that kind of like put them in their place a little bit. So sometimes you have to kind of do things like this to make the atmosphere right for you to like work in and work through, right? Okay, so basically I stopped the reading for that reason. I could feel the stress of people wanting to control the outcome. Then I shut down as well. I'm guessing it has to do with the framework and the boundaries when set at the start of the reading and throughout the reading, and would love to hear your take on this. So yes, and then there's another example that's coming to my head. There are some times when I'll be in a reading. It doesn't happen as much anymore, but truthfully, I don't do as many readings as I used to do because I teach a lot more now. But there's like this pulling I could feel because I'm very clairsentient. I can feel when people are waiting to hear something specific from me. And of course, I want to get, like, if I could get it, if I wanted to get it, I would present it. You know what I mean? Like, of course, like every reader wants to bring through the most wow inspired, accurate, detailed, depth, stream of consciousness. Of course, we all do, right? That's why so many few of us do it, because it doesn't happen all the time. And it's hard for people to pick themselves up after that and like put yourself in the arena again. Okay, here we are going again. But it's the path. It is what it is. It's like any other job. You have great days. You have not great days. You have days where your heart's in it. You have days where you're coping and you're moving through it. It's life. It's just part of the human experience. And I remember having to get to different points of the reading where I would have to say, you know, energetically, I feel, and I could feel it being a distraction to me that you want to hear something very specific for me. And because we've already been sitting for half an hour, I don't feel like I'm going to pull this through. But I did pull through, and I will highlight all the different evidence and stuff that they resonated with and that were healing in nature. I was like, so what is this thing that you're just like waiting for me to say? Because I don't want to disappoint you today, but I obviously haven't brought it through. And I've had some real wild responses to that that I know would probably not be something I could bring through. But they were really energetic barriers to a clear connection with spirit and a clear connection for them, because mediumship is a 3-way link. It's us, sitter, and spirit. And that's a mediumship can be a little bit more inconsistent because we have those variables that we're working with. Spirits, as far as I'm concerned, the most reliable source. The sitter can be wild card and our energy can be wild card. You know, I've gone through a lot of death in the past like 2 months. It's like my energy is so hard to lift my vibration. You know, I lost my friend. I lost my mother-in-law. Like, there's a lot of loss all around me. And it just is what it is, right? I'm human. I can't just like manifest high vibration. Unfortunately, I have to go through the human experience. You have to think about all these different variables that we have. And we just have to show up with really great intentions and doing the best we can. And we also have to know when it's time to move them and not to. And sometimes those are really hard lessons for us, right? So one of the most wild responses I got to this, I'm like, I'm so glad I asked you this because like you would have left. She didn't get this. She was like, not the real deal. But I was mature enough to just like face it. And so what they wanted me to talk about, and the only thing that they wanted me to talk about was a TV remote control that fell off of a mantle. You know, I would love to get that. Absolutely. I wish I did. I absolutely wish I did. But that was the one thing that they were waiting for. Anyone watch that documentary, Surviving Death? That little man who went through that whole documentary trying to trick all the mediums, saying they have to get this or they're not the real deal. Like, I'm like, that's every medium's like worst nightmare. I remember in the Spirit School Collective us having like a really big conversation on that documentary just because of that one guy who just went around trying to trick all these mediums. And it's like, that is like the worst energy to try to create a spiritual connection through. So a lot of this is education as well. If this is something that you've seen Amelia come up a couple times, you may want to just say, you know, this works best when we are both open. So be open to any information that comes through. Of course, I'm going to try to bring through the most specific information for you as possible. I also open up my sessions by saying, you know, I really do like to just channel and bring through what spirit brings to you for the first 20 minutes. And then I will hand it over to you and see if there's anything specific that you want me to work through. If there's anyone you want me to try to connect with or an area of life you want me to focus on. And that also puts my sitter's mind to ease that they will have a space and a chance to see if I could pull something through. And sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. And that's life, baby. Anybody who tells you different is not telling you the truth and not telling you the bullshit. Because I know some very established mediums and it happens to all of us. Oh, I just felt like I saw something. Okay. So, yeah. Yes. Okay. Alexis says, I second this question. Super unpleasant. It takes me out of my flow. And it will until it doesn't. So that's part of the development path and spiritual maturity path. It's not going to be like that always if you sustain the path. But a lot of people I know don't continue the path because it is humbling. She's humbling out here. High highs, low lows. It is what it is. You have to accept that as part of the path, right? This is a great question. Alex, are you in the membership? Like, you guys are like, are you in there? Because like, I just went live on this 3 weeks ago. But she says, how do you deal with online hate or unsatisfied sitters going around and dragging your name through the mud? You can't. I know we can never make 100% of people happy, but it's stressful when these rare occurrences happen. Yes, it happens. It's always happened. It will always happen. And the more we try to control it, the more light we waste. Right? It is true. And so, you know, I've been saying this for years. If you went around, because I only served the Squamish community for my first 7 years of mediumship. I did not do anything online until 2020. Of course, with the pandemic, everyone else going online. I didn't know if I could do readings online. I didn't know if I could teach online. I didn't even know if I could learn online until 2020 and everything went online. So if you walked around Squamish, you would meet a few people who were like, oh my God, like best medium, biggest healing experience. I have some doctors, clients who refer all their patients to me because they have seen the work that I do helps people who have barriers to getting well, because it usually has nothing to do with the medicine or the protocol, but everything to do with what somebody hasn't seen of their life. And that's what I'm able to do. Scorpio rising, medium, I get down really big. So I have a great reputation out there in the community about my mediumship, but there are absolutely a dozen or so people who didn't get the clearest connection. I was not their medium. And there are people out there saying, I just don't get it. I don't get what the big deal is. And there is nothing you can do about that than accept it. Sacred acceptance. You have awareness that this takes place. I accept that this happens and I stand by my work. Right? And so there's nothing you can do to control it. You can make yourself ill trying to people please and like make everybody happy. And believe me, I tried for many, 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 many years. And it was definitely more tax on my light than the light I could put into doing readings. I save all my light now as much as I possibly can. Light is my biggest currency, my light, my energy force. And so I'm always picking and choosing, is this worth my light? is this spending my life, depleting my life, siphoning my life force unnecessarily? And why am I choosing that? And I do, I slip into it. I spiral. I have a human counsel that I reach out to when I spiral, because I still spiral and it still happens. And I still get into funks. And I know that based off of history, I'm not going to stay there. I know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I know the wheels of fortune continue to turn. And so when we accept these realities of life, the things that come up that are painful don't knock us down as hard or as long as they used to. So it used to take me years to process. Well, then take me months and then weeks and then days and then hours and then seconds. And this is what resilience is. So if you can see some of these experiences as things that will only be able to teach us true resilience, that will only be able to get us the clarity that we know who we are and we know what we do and what we stand for, sometimes we will never get to that level of understanding unless we have some of these experiences. So they are what they are. I had an experience earlier this month. I mean, the months just blend. Could have been this month, could have been last month. I don't know. But I posted my first clip. Like I actually had 50 lined up. And, you know, I was already feeling a bit low. You guys could probably tell this year I haven't really been around, especially with free spaces. All my light, all my energy and effort has been focused on the collective and the membership, because I've had a hard year. It's been hard year. And so I don't choose to force when things are hard. I don't choose to post just for the sake of posting. That's just who I am. I preserve my light where I can. But there was this new AI app that I found that made it actually quite easy to create content. And so I uploaded one of my classes and it put together a 1-minute reel. And it said, you know, this will actually inspire people. So I was like, okay, let's post it. I was very proud of it. I was like, this is kind of cool. I told my whole mastermind about it. I'm like, go download this app. It's like super cool. And then I upload it, and that same day, a massive creator with hundreds of thousands of followers shares it as an example of what a spiritual scam artist looks and sounds like. Okay. My first time, like putting my, like, when you're in a class or an intimate space with me, it's different than what you see on the podcast and on these lives. It's like, you go really, really, really deep. And so I wanted to try to show like a bit of the level of depth that we kind of go to. And then that was my first experience kind of like putting it out there publicly. And man, was I triggered for a second. Like, and that was the most beautiful part about that experience, because I really, maybe like a couple hours. And the tricky thing was, is I found out right as I was coming in my house, and it was family day. That's a coming of the date, because I had a host bowl of family that was there that I hadn't seen in years. And I had to try to host and cook and like parent while I'm triggered to high hell. And then when I had time to kind of like reflect on the whole experience, I was actually like, no, I stand by what I said and I stand by my teachings. And I reached out to them directly, which again is something that I wouldn't have done. A less healed Danielle would not have had the gustos to like face it head on. I would have buried my hand under the sand, blocked them. They're still followers. I never even removed them as a follower. And they've been a follower of mine for a long time. And I've been a follower of theirs for a long time too. So I reached out to them right away and I said, hey, I was like, interesting, you share this about me. I've been a long time follower and fan of your page. And she was like, I find that impossible to believe. And I mentioned a few people that we know connected to one another, and they just hearted me and then kind of like left me alone. But I actually chose to not remove them as a follower and like block them. And that felt very powerful to me. And so, you know, did it have any negative impact to me? No, even when somebody shared it, or if it did, I'm unaware of it. And, you know, I was happy that I kind of faced it head on. So it's going to happen. It's okay. It doesn't mean anything unless you give it a lot of meaning and try to find people, you know, Amber in this community, I have Maxine Friend, you know, these are two people in Ray of Radium Vibes. Like, these are three people that are my counsel. They're my perspective shifters. I'm like, this is how I'm seeing the situation. This is how I'm feeling about myself. And these are people I trust, want me to succeed, want me to thrive, love me for me, accept me as my full self. And they're the ones who walk me back to myself. So if you don't have a human counsel, please create one. Because sometimes I couldn't get back to myself without them. I really couldn't. And so it happened. And I hope that makes you feel better. I really, really do. Sacred acceptance. Sacred acceptance. When you put yourself out there, guess what happens? More people see you. right? And then much like the open rate of newsletters, my brain works in mysterious ways, but when you have 100 subscribers, you probably have a 90% open rate. You have 10,000 subscribers, you probably have a 20% open rate. You know what I mean? So as you become more visible and seen, there might be more people who don't get it, and yet more people that do. But try to focus on the people who get it and preserve your light. Hopefully that helps at my TED Talk. Anyways, let me know how you feel about that. I didn't know if I could read in person because all I did was online. I've only had 2 accidental in-person readings, so I can totally relate the opposite. Yeah, I won't tell you what I prefer. I think it's pretty clear what I prefer. But you don't know what you don't know. You got to try it all. You got to experience it all. And, you know, one of my clients today, I had a mentorship client with somebody here at Spirit School. And I said, you know, Spirit really wants you to philosophize your own personal philosophy. Like, why do we go through shit? Like, why are things hard? Why can't it be easy? And like, would you trade, knowing what you know now and where you got to now, would you trade those hardships for ease? Like, realistically, would you trade everything you went through for a life of more ease? I don't know. I can see blessings in everything I've struggled with. I really can. I can see higher teachings. I can see how they've evolved into my body of work. And they're not just for me. They're for a lot of people. So some things to consider as you are going through these experiences. Okay. So Ashley asks, I'd like guidance on how to connect with my nonverbal son's highest soul self, gain his consent, and be able to intentionally communicate with he and his guide. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. Thank you, Ashley. I used to do these a lot more in here. I hope to do them a lot more in the future. Absolutely. Again, I've been in this kind of like capacity experience in the past year. It's like everything is kind of blown up. I've been kind of like playing with capacity. And so I've just been kind of like doing what I can and what I have capacity for. So thank you for being patient and understanding of that. So I don't have any lived experience with this exact situation. If there is somebody in the community who does, please bring your wisdom into the chat and I will read it out loud so that people on the replay who don't have access to the beautiful chat and conversation you guys are having can receive that wisdom. But I will say that quite a few years ago, 2020, I worked with a string. Things happen in clusters, and this is going to come up for your question, Travis, but things come up in clusters for me, like cluster lessons. So I'll get an experience and I'll get like a handful of them. And then the spirit's wave saying, you got it? I'm like, we got it. And so I actually went through a cluster of having people going through really nasty active divorces all at the same time. It's like every mentee client I had was going through a divorce. And one of the things that came through from spirit for them was, you know, I wonder if you can sit with a cup of tea in your hand and just send them love, soul to soul. And if you have soul's permission, it will be felt. If you have soul's permission, things will shift and change. And I asked them, even if they had to fake it till they made it, just soul to soul, wish them well, wish them love and grace and abundance and ease and compromise, see them in the light that resonates with all that you are intending. If there's a color, if there's like a material, like wrap them in that, send them love. Offer yourself the same love that you offer them, if not more. Give yourself double the love. And I started asking my clients who were going through really nasty, like some of them had to drop their kids off at the cop shop to do the exchange. You know what I mean? Like really nasty. And every single one of them at that time came back saying they're conceding. Like they're actually working with me now. They're flexible. They didn't have to tell them that they were doing this. They didn't have to, because some people might want to do it out of spite. Like, I'm sending you love. We're not talking about that kind, right? Like, bless you. We're not talking about that. Love that for you. Not that. It's like true. From the spirit, from the center of our most empowered soul, love for you, love for me, love for us all, right? Like that kind of energy, that kind of vibe. And they actually started seeing like improvement in communication. And it was actually really eye-opening for me that we can talk soul to soul. I know too that when my brother was in a coma and he almost died 2 years ago, it was a very traumatic experience for my family. I spent a lot of time I didn't talk out loud very much because, you know, he was in a coma and, you know, I would just play like background music, but he can recall to me different things I talked to him about soul to soul. So I believe even if our conscious minds cannot be aware of the communication that is taking place, our souls pick it up. So I wonder if it could be as simple for you as sitting and you'll feel a contraction or expansion. Do I have permission to speak to your soul, son? And then just communicate. And I bet you, you will hear things back as well. So hopefully that gives you something to try next. Yes. Okay. Liz here says, do you have any tips or tricks on rebounding during your reading after receiving a no? Again, all my developing light workers, there's a lot of you here. Please put in the chat what you did. What did you do? Okay. So that it's not just me, because you all have a ton to share. You all do. We have some very accomplished mediums in this space and readers. Do you have any tips and tricks on rebounding during a reading after receiving a no? My last two practice readings, I received a download of information that was very specific, but both times it didn't sit with either sitter. I'm feeling discouraged as I have been on a roll. I am trying to not use words or feel like disconnected, as you have taught us, Danielle. Thank you. Yeah. And that was 2018, 2019, 2020 teachings. I'm a little bit more flexible on that now. Okay. So the truth is, one thing that I guide all my developing mediums through at some point in their journey with me is this teaching around one of your tasks of becoming a reader is becoming neutral to the yeses and the noes. You have to learn to become neutral. It is just data. It is information moving through you. And, you know, this is the tricky thing about being a medium. It's like this fine balance of validation. It's like, yes, we need validation because we need people to respond with like, yes, I understand, or no, I don't understand. We have to have that data and we have to have that validation. But what that validation means is part of our spiritual practice. If a yes is everything to us and it's what gives us joy, it's what gives us sense of worth, it's what gives us a sense of value, well, the law of duality and balance says then no is going to have the equal effect in extreme. You feel me on this? So yeses can take us to the highest of peak. No's can take us to the lowest of valleys. So the most sustainable path is going to be one of staying neutral to the yeses and the no's. You are merely a channel. And that is something that will only come through experience and building confidence in the same parallel as experience. There's no magic key. There's no secret trick. It's just learning. And then two, what typically happens, and it doesn't happen every time, but it happens enough that it's a very common teacher across, or a very common teaching across teachers, is like, I know even for myself, I'm not going to name names, but I had a reading with a TV medium in 2016 that was like the most I've ever paid for a reading. It was like $500. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have a heart attack, like paying this, but I had to. And if you had told me for the first 4 or 5 years after getting that reading, I would have said it was probably one of the most inaccurate readings I've ever received. And then this shit started coming together. And I was like, I feel like they said something about this. And I went back after 5 years and I listened back to that reading. I was like, they were actually dead on. I did not understand it at all until years later. And so can we leave enough space and grace that we may not be validated in the moment? This is how come you will hear some medium say, just keep it with you. Might make sense later. And you let it go. If you learn to meditate, you learn to let go of the thoughts. They roll off you. They move through you. Thank you. Don't need that. Don't need that. Don't need that. It's almost like the same technique, just data, just telling you if you're hot or not. Felt really clear, mark it down. I'm going to keep going. We keep the energy moving. Because if you get stuck in that no, your energy becomes stuck and you have to move the energy, right? So hopefully that helped. Hopefully that helps. But let me see what some of these comments. Time flies with you guys. I tell you, spirit math and spirit time makes no sense. No is the next best answer to yes. That's a great, great quote. Yeah. So Leilani says, that's okay. I'm going to put it aside and move on to the next piece of information. First of all, at least 50% of no's end up being yeses. Alexa says, breathe through it, accept it, and continue as best you can. It can be discouraging, but do not judge yourself. That's the hardest part sometimes. Absolutely. Kay says, I will try not to look at them on Zoom so I don't pick up on the negative nonverbal. Also, in my mind, I feel as if they said yes, and I'm still working on it. 100%. You're like, that was a yes. Delulu is the Salulu, 100%. No, I'm all down with that, Kate, 100%. Again, however we need to progress beyond that is our development journey. And that's going to be nuanced and unique for us. I learned how to hold energy. I just taught this when I was teaching double linking last week. I was like, you know, okay, you weren't there yesterday for the class, but I said, it really is a teaching and holding energy. So if you're on the stage or you're sharing a spirit with somebody and you have to wait for your impression to say your piece, that's actually a brilliant exercise in holding energy. So I hold energy. I can hold my vibration in a certain space and I can do it for a long amount of time now. But when I was a baby medium, it was like, right? And then you're like, oh, I can hold it a bit longer now. Okay, I'm dipping. It's like, okay, I'm back in the mediumship. And then it's like, you know, when I studied under Mavis Patilla, to be an advanced medium, to be considered an advanced medium, you had to hold that vibration for 20 minutes. That's what advanced mediumship is. So you just learn how to hold energy. And yeses and noes can't fuck with it. Unfuckable with it. So yeah. Anyway, I can't read them all, but you got this. It's possible. And Alexa, I just filmed a TV pilot. I can tell you, I love these people and there's no shade to the people. It is what TV is. But I had one of the producers, I was saying, you know, I don't edit my podcast really at all. I just kind of throw an intro on it and I kind of put it up and I stand by what I say. Even though it might change. And he's like, oh my God, on TV, every 3 seconds is edited. So I think that's the pressure that we feel as mediums, is that we're trying to live up to a unrealistic perception of what a reading looks and sounds like, because we are getting highly real. And this is something that I get my advanced mediumships to. And Leilani, if you wouldn't mind posting yours again in the main space, I would love it. It's a great example. And Brie too. I said, create a highly real out of one of your readings. And Brie actually picked her worst reading, or her perception of her worst reading, and it sounded phenomenal. So I said, okay, does this kind of show you that we may have an unrealistic lens on what readings look and sound like out there in the public for the most part, right? There are still amazing mediums out there who are just like incredible. Like they're here to show us what is possible and what is the potential on this path, 100%. They're here to inspire. But for the most part, it's going to be a blend of like hit and misses. And one of my first teachers said, you know, sitters remember the hits and readers remember the misses. So you may be reflecting on all the things that you didn't get. And your sitter, meanwhile, is like in heaven that they just got a couple messages that really landed and resonated. Why fuck with it? Like, why put a wet blanket on experience that for the most part served a great purpose, right? I'm like, I don't know. I think that we just have to be less judgy of ourselves. Give us some grace. Okay, Lydia says, how do you differentiate between spirit guides and know each coming through and what their signs are for to know which one is which? So I'm going to give you my example, because again, if you asked, you know, all 58 people here who are alive, they'll probably all have very different answers. When I first started developing mediumship, so I was actually just talking about this. So funny. There's like an ascension that takes place. Like at first, like angels were like still out of the realm of what I could connect with. Even to this day, creator is like a hard God is like a hard concept for me to feel connected to. I could definitely connect with the vibration of angels, but there's like an ascension that comes up. So for me to feel confident that I can connect with divine loved ones on the other side, I actually chose to do that through spirit guides, because I, for some reason, have always had an unwavering faith that spirit guides exist and that I have been connecting with them since I was 7. So that was the most real thing for me. So for the first, honestly, my path was really slow and a slow burn, guy. So this might sound really painful for some of you, but for almost 2 years, at least 3 days a week, a bunch of Virgos, I would sit for half an hour with Skylar. And I would say, give me your sign you're here. I need it to be physical. I'm too skeptical. It can't be clairvoyant. It can't be like an emotion. I need something physical. And I really worked with Skylar on defining what that physical sensation was. And it is very apparent to me now. And over the course of time, I learned to trust it, because the delay was my trust. And his sign comes through for me now when I'm not looking for it. I actually can't call it in. It's usually when I'm distracted or I'm driving or I'm kind of out and about and I'll get my sign. And it's always when I need it the most. And I'm like, thank you for letting me know you're here. And so I sat with great intention on being able to differentiate my energy from theirs. And that's a foundational mediumship practice in itself. Some people call it sitting in the power, right? Like you get really used to what your energy feels like first and foremost. I think what I saw earlier with that reflection. Okay. So once you get very intimately aware of your energy, what it feels like, it becomes a lot easier to be able to discern foreign energy. That's actually how you become aware. I feel aware of the presence of, because it's not my energy, because I know what mine feels like, because I've done that due diligence work. And then I've done that work sitting in my intimate power, understanding what it feels like, learning to control it, learning to expand it and contract, right? Energetic sovereignty. And so that's really how you learn to differentiate. And then through this practice, what I didn't understand, what I was developing was my keen sense of clairsentience. And what ended up happening for me, because I went that physical route, was spirit created a map around my body. So I can tell when guides and angels come through because they come directly behind me. I can feel paternal side on my left, maternal side on my right. And so, you know, because I built up so much awareness around energy and my energy and the spirit's energy, I can now discern and differentiate all the different beings. And one thing I tried to teach this round in both of my mediumship masterminds was actually starting a session. How many spirits do you feel are here? Because that's actually how I now can recognize. I can feel my sessions. Like I definitely feel two spirits here. I'm going to start with this one first. Right. And so that heightened sensitivity takes a lot of sitting and practice and a spiritual practice. And then it becomes integrated. Right. So just have fun sitting with spirit. You know, I do this wonderful exercise sometimes with people using my grandmother's energy because she's a very strong spirit communicator. And you could try this for yourself with any loved ones you have in spirit. And you don't have to be a medium to do this, by the way. And you can just say, you know, thank you, mom. Thank you, dad. Thank you, whoever you've lost, brother, cousin, aunt, uncle, whoever you have on the other side. Say, thank you for standing behind me and placing your hands on my shoulder. Right. And then you say, thank you for standing before me and allowing me to feel a space in each other. And I just simply ask them to move around me and I become just observantly aware of the shifts in energy as I'm asking them to move around. And this is also how I built up my confidence in what I was picking up. And this is how come most of my mediumship works with clairsentience, which is the best modality. I mean, I would way prefer clairaudience. For sure. But it is what it is. And I wouldn't trade feeling that presence of spirit world for anything else. Okay, Robin, not necessarily a mediumship question, but wondering what you found to be helpful to integrate who you are having outerworldly experiences in a world which is definitely and accepted and based on physicality. The last several years, I feel almost split in two, or as if I have one foot in one world and one in the other. Thank you for sharing your journey as you have. So here's something that's coming through me, and I've never really thought about it like this in the moment. It's like you're not splitting yourself. Society is splitting you, right? Like you're still one whole person. And this is where I like the indigenous lens of spirituality more than the fragmented lens of, you know, what we would call like Western, like where we're broken, we're not fixed, we're not whole, we're trying to be complete. You know, from an indigenous lens, we're always whole and complete, right? And so I refuse to see myself as split. I just don't. Now, sometimes I will feel the outer worldly pressures. It's like, okay, I have muggle shit to deal with. I mean, the first call I got today was from CRA. I was like in my human immediately. You know what I mean? And then I have my processes on how to transfer over to my spiritual self. It's always through prayer for me. And so when I want to be in my spiritual self and I want to be in my spiritual state, even if I am, CRA is IRS. So American IRS is Canadian Revenue Agency. IRS is, I don't even know what it stands for. The government. About money in my business. And I'm like, my accountant, I'm like, can you deal with this for me? But like, I can't. My nervous system can't right now. And I pay her for that. And she deals with it for me. So, you know, you will feel that pull and that tug. You will. But I don't want you to see yourself as being fragmented or, you know, torn into two. It's like society is asking different areas of you to exist at one time. So one of the things, and actually the only thing that has ever worked for me, is present, right? The only thing that has ever worked for me in feeling a tug in my mommying, a tug in the business, a tug in my marriage, a tug in my health, is in this moment, I'm with my children. I'm as present as humanly possible with them right now. With you all right now, I'm able to be a medium and a teacher here because I'm in my full presence with you all right now. When I'm at the gym, you know, and this isn't always the case, there was actually my spiritual low, my lowest of the low was actually in January. No, it was December. It was right before Christmas. And, you know, burnt out and like just trying to like, you know, come back out of like the energetic, you know, building the school was a lot. There was a lot going on, a lot. I don't need to bore you with all the details, but with definitely like a mentally and spiritually kind of like low for me. And I went to go to the gym. And when I went back to my car door was open and it was still running. I left my car running. Like I was so lacking in presence in my life that I completely forgot to turn off my car. And I live in one of the most environmentally friendly cities you'll ever, like, I'm surprised my car did not get like vandalized. From all the earth-loving people who live in Squamish, so I'm so grateful to like live here. But yeah, it was just like a very big moment of me. Like, I'm not present in my life right now. I need to get back to presence. And that's the only way that I know how to stay focused on my human and stay focused on my spirituality. And that's spiritual practice in itself. And that's all I can really say about that. And then it's a process of elimination. There are things I had to let go. I used to volunteer a lot. I used to be on the board of directors for See the Sky. I do volunteer still at Helping Hands and the food bank and stuff like that. And I donate a lot of money there as well. I used to be on the parents committee. And if my kids were at an event, like I was everywhere. And the truth is, when I chose to become a medium and somebody who may be considered a spiritual mentor, spiritual teacher, or spiritual director, that is actually where I wanted to be. And I knew I couldn't do it all. So I had to really do an audit of my life and like, what do I keep and what do I let go of? And I had to let go of a lot of things. And that was really freeing for me. And I'm always having to do that audit on life. And like, even now I'm in a very sticky situation of having to do these audits as well. And it's just part of the human path. And it is an exercise in letting go of things as well. So hopefully that's helpful. Paulina says, thank you for this. How do you comfort someone who is just going through something tough in their lives or who is open about a subject for the first time and it's a tough moment to share a process for both sitter and practitioner? How can I best support someone who is going through grief? So it would be easier for me to like run off with an example, but I'm going to use the most extreme example that I have in my body of work in my life, and that's in my death doula work. Sitting with people who are in the active process of dying is a very sobering experience to have. And it's a very raw and real experience to have. And it keeps me very humble doing this work. And it can feel very helpless sometimes because you can't cure them. You can't fix it. You can't say something that is going to be a magic pill that makes all right. But what you can do is be there for them while they work through like their stuff. Now, I have to be careful here because, you know, I have to be very clear in my death doula work. Like, I'm not a therapist, right? And so it's a lot of question asking. Like, people are like, you know, what happens to us after I die? What do you think happens after we die? It's not actually within the scope of practice for death doula work if you're certified in Canada to impress your belief upon someone. That's actually considered out of scope, right? And so I find that when we are in presence of people going through deep states of grief or processing, sometimes it is enough just being there for them to talk to. It takes a lot of labor off of their shoulders. And a lot of people don't have a lot of their human counsel that they can bring stuff like this into. So unfortunately, the most helpful thing sometimes, which doesn't feel very helpful, and in truth, the death doula work, as much as I would love to say it, like, fixes things and makes things right. It's not. We're just another space holder for somebody to walk home from. And sometimes it is more helpful for the family than it is even for the person dying because we're carrying that weight, right? And that's what we kind of do as space holders. And a lot of it is validating people's experiences. and asking more questions. You know, like I don't have any I need a specific example to run off of you, but that's what a lot of it is. You know, like, and sometimes the most helpful thing with somebody going through grief is grief fucking sucks. Like, it absolutely sucks. And it is actually really good and helpful. Like, I read so many books or I listen to so many books, and I'm just like so thirsty for knowledge in the spiritual space that I always have somewhere I can point them to a real thought leader, like somebody who's so qualified in this topic that they have books and programs and like they get asked to speak around the world on this. And I'm able to say, have you thought about looking into like this teacher or like this philosophy, or, you know, there is this teacher who philosophizes this. How does that sit with you? Right. So it's not about like fixing people, because I know that's what we really, really, really want to do as practitioners. But a lot of it is the art of spoke base holding. In the collective, we have, I had a grief therapist come in who was super qualified, Alyssa Pressman. She came in and she taught a whole class on epic space holding. And that's something I would definitely point people to go look in the development vault if you have access to that, because she brought through really a lot of advice on how to hold space for grief. But for me, I place my hand on my heart, and that's just something automatically that I do. And that's actually like a physical cue that we have with one another. Like, I see you, I feel you, right? We feel our heart. I feel this. Absolutely. And like that cue, I remember running into somebody on the beach, and like they just, some people open up to me. They've always been like this with me. And she just started crying. She's like, my dog just died. I'm like, and she's like, yeah, exactly. Wait, and that's all we did. I see, sis. Like, let's hug. And that's all we did with each other. It was one of the most beautiful, raw exchanges if we could have ever had. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure if that's helpful, but it is an art, and it is something that you get better at the more you do it as well. Right. And I really do treat every single person like I would treat somebody that I love the most, like my children, my old parents, like my own husband. Like, how would I approach this with them? And I approach everyone who works with me the same amount of like love and care as that. And I believe you do too. I know you, Paulina, you've been in the collective, or you were at least for like a long time, and you've been through the initiation. So just trust that you're going to know what to do in the moment when it counts. Would you recommend death doula work? Do you know if a certification is needed worldwide? Definitely have lots of experience with grief and space holding. In Canada, to be recognized in hospitals, yes, you do need a certification. And it is done through Douglas College. Just so you know, it's like a 5-day, which I was actually surprised to find out that the birth doula was only 2-day, but the death doula was 5. Interesting. I trust myself with transitioning someone out rather than coming in the way I'm not catching that. But yes, I definitely recommend that. If you're in the state, I highly recommend going with Grace. I found her like even before I was a medium. She was on YouTube. She's a lawyer, so she knows the legal in and out. Because a lot of death doula work is not just like helping people process. Okay, let me look about New Zealand. Sorry, Sarah, I forgot you were in New Zealand. Let me look into that. And I do have a few clients and Erin's here. If you know anything, Erin, let us know. Still, going with Grace would have a lot of good knowledge. And what I like about her is like the legal in and out. Because sometimes what we're asked to do as death doulas is not actually visualing. I've actually only done visualing one. Most of the time I'm working with people after like a diagnosis, and we're talking about like time left. Like, how do we want to spend the time? Like, what legacy project? Like, legacy projects I really love as well. You know, I recently helped somebody reconcile some unsaid things with people in their lives. And like, you know, do you want to say something? Do you want to do it now? Do you want to leave a letter? I've helped people access medical assistance in dying. I've helped people who couldn't access it and the anger that comes with that. So you just never know what you're going to come into, but it is a beautiful thing. I think what I learned, why I wanted to study death doula work, to be honest with you, my original intent with it was to learn about grief, because up until 2020, I had never experienced grief from loss. I recognize after I experienced grief from loss, I had experienced grief before. I felt, and I hated myself. I felt grief. That same air atmosphere changes around you, hard to breathe. It's like breathing in a sauna. Same with when I left my race car team, when I left that industry. I do all for free. I do it all for free. All my death doula work is for free. You can pay, you can charge though. A lot of death doulas charge up to $50 an hour or $2,000 passing. Just so you know, but I do a lot of my work for free, which Spirit is saying I have to stop. So we'll talk about that another day. That's about a year from now, you'll hear me talk about that. But it's something I'm kind of working through right now. There's so much I want to say, but something feels so like private. What can you say? What can you not say? But yes, okay. So I wanted to learn about grief. So that's why I took death doula courses. I didn't actually think I would be actively in the death doula role, but I will say that I wanted to learn about grief, and I got that and so much more. The death doula course for me was the most life-affirming experience I ever had in my life. And the teacher that I had, we still talk. Like, I had a really hard passing case a couple weeks ago that, like, she even said, she was like, this is an unbelievable situation, and it made me energy sick, and I'm still recovering from it on top of everything else I had going on. And so I'm like, yes, it was an unbelievable situation. And so it can be really heavy. So I can only personally work with like one person at a time, to be honest with you. Erin says it's not regulated here, and I haven't heard of a certification at all, but there are definitely people doing it. Check out Death Cafes and Death Doula New Zealand. Your local hospice will also have information. Absolutely. Just do a little bit of digging. But I highly also recommend, like, I've even thought about taking it, even if it doesn't advance my accreditation with, the Canadian Death Doula Association. And the person I studied under wrote the entire scope of practice for it. Cannot get her. Tracy, come on my podcast, please. She doesn't want to be, like, known or anything. She's like, no, this is just what I do. But I'm like, I want to share you with, like, a million people. But yes. If you could find someone to study under who's like really compassionate, it's life changing. I'm so happy I have her here. I'm so happy. So the thing with the going with grace is that not only does she have a certification program, again, certification nowadays is very nuanced, right? Anyways, I won't go into that path, but she also has like a community and a membership attached to it as well. So a lot of like ongoing studies as well. But it's a very important area of work to do if you can do it. It's heavy. It's hard. It's not easy. It's not romantic. If you're romanticizing it in any way, no, it's the exact opposite of that. But I will say that what I learned through looking at the history of death and dying in society, we have forgotten how to walk each other home. We have forgotten how to hold space for one another. But there is this natural space holding that can come and kick in. And so I feel like where we're at in society, especially Western civilization now, it's like we're relearning and rediscovering and reclaiming a lot of what we've lost through industrialization of like the hospital system and the birthing system and stuff like that. And so we are actually kind of uniquely placed to come in during this time as part of that remembrance and that reclamation. So that's how I see my work. Like, let's relearn to like walk each other home, right? Like, I'd like to pass a home if I can. And I can't unless people at home are willing to hold space for me at that level. And that's one thing that comes through a lot in my readings, a lot actually, is that spirit will say thank you for keeping me at home as long as you did. Because that's where we were always used to transitioning, right? Anyways, I'll leave that there. I have these moments of awareness with the unseen, but feel so overwhelmed when wondering how to start intentionally tuning in. So interesting that's coming up. Okay. So awareness is like a separate piece. I think awareness is the foundation of everything. I think awareness is something that you will be developing and strengthening and fine tuning for the rest of your development career. I don't think we are ever done with awareness. And it's funny that you bring this up because I downloaded the book Awareness by Elaine Garrett years ago. And I started reading it, but it was a bit dry for me. So I ended up going down her psilocybin and psycho, not kind of research that she did. But I want to go back to this book on awareness because it's coming up a lot more. Like, I realize more as I'm going through the struggle buses of life that, like, for a glimpse of time, I can become aware of the beauty in life. I always have to go back to what needs to be dealt with. But when I learn how to work with the medicine and the magic of awareness, life is more brilliant and more beautiful. But when it comes to mediumship in particular, because you're saying here how to start intentionally tuning in, I mean, that exercise I gave you earlier of like asking your loved one to come forward and like placing your awareness of them around you, asking them to like move their light. I always say standing, which maybe this would be like, they're not standing. They don't have feet. I'm like, I know. But like as their light kind of like moves around you, you can become aware of their presence one of my favorite everyday exercises, which is coming up as a micro lesson in the collective. So I'm sorry to give you guys a spoiler, but you will have heard me say this before my students. But one of the ways that I practice IRL in real life was even in grocery store lineups. I would just become aware of my energy, and then I would just subtly become aware of the presence and the person in front of me in line. And then I would become aware of the person behind me. And I wouldn't try to name it or put a title around it. I would just be like, I can sense the difference in the awareness between these three energies. And then I would throw my awareness even further to the cashier who was a few people ahead, right? And I just like shift that awareness to them, and I could feel and differentiate the difference. And that's an everyday awareness exercise. I wish it was more glamorous or whatnot, but yeah, I mean, if here's something that came through about aliens. I don't know how true this is, and I cannot tell you this for sure, but I kind of placed the question out there. What's the spirit? Like, how do UFOs move? And they said intention and awareness.
I was like, oh.
So I wonder if like the future of like, honestly, I wonder if the future of like what keeps us in this like paradigm of like speed of light, you know what I mean? Being limited to the fastest thing being the speed of light, which probably is not the fastest thing in the universe at all. We just don't have awareness of what else is out there. But I think like awareness and attention is going to be enough to, I don't even know what you want to call it. What do you call it? Woo-woo people? Jumping timeline? Quantum leaping? I don't know what language people use nowadays, but I think that we'll be able to get around to more places through like awareness and intention. But I think that's come we're on this time where so many more of us are waking up to like awareness and stuff like that. Quantum leap. Okay, thank you. I'm just such a practical burnout. So yeah, try a couple of those little exercises, and you probably, I mean, awareness is accessible to everyone. You know what I mean? If we try hard enough and if we develop it. And then, you know, one of my personal practices that also helped deepen my experience to awareness was Kristen Neff's work on self-compassion. The first step is awareness. And her three-step process to moving through shitting on myself, essentially, was life-changing to me. Like, the woman deserves a Nobel Peace Prize, as far as I'm concerned. She came up with a measuring stick of self-compassion, like a scientific measuring tool. Like, she is the Brené Brown of self-compassion. And the process is three steps. And the first one is awareness. I'm aware right now. I'm down in the dumps. I'm aware. I'm triggered. Awareness is always the first step. We cannot heal what we cannot be aware of. So even like in self-development, there's like a lot of awareness. And the second step is acceptance. Accept. This is where I'm at. You cannot heal anything that you cannot accept. So awareness and then acceptance, right? And then you have to talk to yourself as you would talk to anyone else that you love, right? The awareness is everywhere. Awareness is everywhere. And hopefully this helps. Kristen Neff. I joined her membership, and she has like this toolbox kit where it's like, you know, you need to be talked down right now. Here's a practice. Anyways, my therapist recommended her, and I'm glad she did. She's changed my life. Literally, last question, but please do drop in your emotions, because I always like a little bit of validation that this is valuable for you. Did you ever have a streak of off readings in your development? I have a streak of off readings in my professional. She happened. I would label my last few as kind of duds. After working through a lot of ego stuff that followed, I feel encouraged to keep going. You've been called. That's a calling. The calling. Okay. There's like a career, purpose, and a calling. This is a calling. And you have been called. I feel encouraged to keep going. I just wonder what my lesson is here. I can't tell you what the lesson is. Your spiritual practice, Travis, is sitting there without self-judgment and saying to your spirit, to your higher self, thank you for revealing to me the higher learnings from this experience, the things that will help progress me along. And you spend some time with your experiences without judging, without blame, without shame. And you just say, these are the higher learnings I'm taking with me. And then you assess, what are the lower learnings that I am ready to let go of now? And through ceremony, through ritual, through prayer, through visualization, through, I don't care what, you let go of what you don't need to carry anymore. And I mentioned it before, but what I have found is that spirit will train us in clusters. So when we are meant to work through something, we will probably see anywhere from the next 5 to 10 sessions that thing comes through, right? And I started realizing this very early on in my development, and I'm going to use this exact example around a motorcycle. Clairvoyantly, I kept seeing a motorcycle, and I would say, did they have a motorcycle? And 10 out of times was no. But then as I reflect, I'm like, why do we keep showing me a motorcycle, right? And then I started reflecting, like, what were those sessions like? Oh, they all were car accidents. Even though I was seeing a motorcycle, clairvoyance has never been the most accurate for me. And so I started playing. I'm like, oh, I wonder if that was trying to teach me that was like a vehicular. Because I actually worked with race cars my whole life. So in truth, like if they showed me a race car or a car, I probably would have gone down that path. And motorcycles are very foreign to me. So the next session I saw a motorcycle and I was like, did this person pass in a vehicle accident? Yes. Okay. And I kept trying it. And I was like, okay, weird, but it is what it is. And so sometimes to take that kind reflection on like, what are the higher learnings? What are the higher teachings? What am I ready to release and let go of? And then what will happen is we'll come up again. You're like, are you though? Are you though? And if you pass, you're like, okay, next lesson. If you don't, it will come up until you learn.
Oh.
And this is how come a lot of people do not sustain the path, because she is humbling. She is a humbling path. And I don't think that we're meant to be perfect in this work. I really don't. I think if spirit wanted us to be perfect in this work, we would be perfect in this work, and we're not. So philosophy homework for you. Why? Why is it like that? Even the best mediums, even the ones who are the most famous, the most highest of reputations are not perfect. So why? What's the divinity behind that? And that's how I work through my shit. Okay. I just wonder that maybe the lessons here may be several things. And what you'd recommend doing after readings that don't seem to pull too much through. Okay. So what I do, now I am somebody that's who wants to know everything all the time. Boring. It's exactly. Human is not perfect. Nature is not perfect. The animal kingdom is not perfect. We actually have no examples of perfection around us. I think, I don't want to go there. My social justice part's coming out, but I think we're being conditioned by society, if we will, around this elusive perfection that no one has and we have no example of. So it's like chasing a ghost, essentially, right? So here's what I do. I will go through a session. I will go through an experience. And again, not every session's a knock in the park. You accept your imperfections as perfect. And I actually, my yoga mats that were a disaster said perfectly evolving on it, because you are perfectly evolving in every step of the way, and just accept it as you go.
Exactly.
So what I do is I will go through a session. Now, I am someone who is very hard on myself. It's just who I am. I have to accept it. It's teaching me a lot about like self-love and self-compassion, which is part of my body of work now, which is probably why I came in. And if I'm being really hard on myself, you know, I had a hard reading last week and like nothing really happened that I would have loved to have happened. I had all the best intentions and stuff, but, you know, life's been hard. It is what it is. I can't lift my vibrations up when I have so much going on that is depressing and grief riddled. And so, yeah, you cry a little, you like beat yourself up a little. And then when you are kind of done with doing that, I basically allow myself to see, what are the higher teachings of this? What are the lessons around this? What am I ready to let go of? Do I still need to be hard on myself about this? And I tell you, this works every time for me. I will just set a timer. I will be like, you know what? I'm not going to try to fix or repair or change who I am, because that's futile. I am who I am. I am what I am. So I'm going to give myself 20 minutes to be a crybaby. And I'm going to give myself 20 minutes to be my 14-year-old self, the self-loathing, you know, the one who never felt good enough, and just like run wild. Have your tantrum. You got 20 minutes to figure it out. And then after 20 minutes, I let it go and I move on. And that's all you can really do. And that's what works for me. You can try it out for yourself. Maybe you need an hour. Maybe you give yourself 5 minutes. I don't know. You have to figure out what works for you. But I have seen from just like past teachers and stuff, like people just try to rise above it and ignore it. It exists. And then it kind of leaves this unrealistic impression on what it is. You know what I mean? Okay, so those were all the questions. I mean, we covered everything from aliens to death doula to awareness, but it's a perfect way to end. And, you know, let me just end on this, that, you know, I've been doing readings for 11 years. I've helped hundreds honestly over 1,000 people by now through the art of mediumship. And there's probably a dozen or so that I couldn't connect for, or the connection was not my best work. You know what I mean? It is what it is. And those readings don't define me and who I am as a reader. The good readings don't even get to define me as a reader. And if I do, the ones that are not as good will probably have the equal impact on us. We work on behalf of the world of spirit. And, you know, we just keep going. The next reading. So hopefully this helped as a starting point, but don't let any handful of readings define who you are or try to put you in a box at all. And yeah, it's a calling. And it's not always squeaky clean and tidy. And it's not always easy. We're here to expand people. And unfortunately, if we even look at going back to the beginning of the Big Bang Theory, there was a contraction before an expansion. So we know that the expansion is coming after the contraction, and we have to learn to sit in that contractive space and find peace there. And I think that's a real big part of the spiritual practice as well. Okay. So I'm loving on you all. This is the last thing I am doing before my holiday. So I'm flying out to New Zealand tomorrow, but my mastermind, my collective, my community here, I will see you all in a couple of weeks. I will be back on the 8th of April, and I will be back and full in. We are discussing angels next month in the collective. It's going to be more or less a month of raising our vibration. We have some fun things coming up. Ray is going to be teaching animal communication in the community as well, in the membership. And then in May, we're going to be doing a healing lodge, a social circle and stuff like that. So we have a lot of really fun things coming up. So thank you for your grace as I disappear for about 18 days and recoup and, you know, come back stronger and clearer, all of you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love you all. I will see you on the other side. And yeah, have a good start of spring and airy season tomorrow. Cannot wait for Pisces season next. Okay, bye guys. See you later.
Did you know that Spirit School is not just a podcast? It's an actual school. If you go to myspiritschool.com, you can invest in self-study courses, live programs, and of course, the Spirit School Collective, my baby, my monthly.